Another guest to talk to. The DA comes in once a month to chat with us. We're not getting him today, but we are getting Colin Sims, and we're glad to have him. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good. Your position officially with the DA's office is?
I am the chief of the criminal division for St. Tammany in Washington Parish.
So you don't see anything exciting or unique or interesting at all. I mean, that sounds very boring.
I see all the things I wish I didn't see.
Yeah, right. And that you can't talk about, too.
That's right.
I'll try not to ask any questions about that. What's your background, real quick?
I've been a prosecutor for 17 years. I was a federal prosecutor for close to 9 years before that with the Eastern and Western Districts of Louisiana, and started as a prosecutor in New Orleans before that, but from Mandeville, and I love what I do.
All right. How'd you end up back at a DA's office after working with the feds, though? Was that kind of a career path for you, or just happened to?
It was a series of coincidences. And look, you always want to come home and have an impact in your own backyard. But from a timing standpoint, I happened to have some cases in federal court that there was some crossover with friends of Warren's, and when he won the first DA's race, there was a conversation with various people, and I mentioned that I would love to come home and have an impact, and we had started having a series of meetings, and it kind of spiraled from there.
Great. All right. Real quick, what do you like to do outside of work? Hobbies, passions, interests?
I've got whatever my three kids are doing.
Okay. How old are they? What ages?
They are 15, 14, and 12.
Oh, my goodness.
And they all play multiple sports. So I'm actually leaving for Thibodeau tomorrow to
what sport? Baseball. All right. And are you coaching or?
No.
Okay.
No.
And are you a sane baseball fan? Because the parents get a little crazy in baseball.
I've had to escort myself out a couple times, you know.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad you're here. Let's talk about what you want to talk about. Give me the first thing. What's on your agenda for today?
So one of the major things that we have, you know, in the courthouse is coming out of this post-COVID, this time period. And, you know, at any given time prior to COVID, the district attorney's office, he had about 1,100 felonies pending trial at any given time, a whole wide array of cases. During COVID, courthouses were pretty much shut down, couldn't try cases with any regularity. But we still charge cases. We set up in people's houses. We set up review stations and computers and whatnot. So we still charge 6,000 or sub 6,000 defendants with felonies during COVID with no ability to really try cases. What does that mean? Why is that important? Well, the people who came in and pled guilty weren't volunteering to go to jail. They were pleading guilty to lower level offenses, probation, and move on with their life, leaving behind a very high concentration of major offense cases. So we come out of COVID at the end of 2021 with about 2,100 felonies pending trial, with 10 divisions of court to try them in, and we receive one trial week a month to dig out of that hole. So we have to be laser focused on what we're selecting, but also trying other types of cases to make the whole thing move. So if you get one trial week a month in 10 divisions of court, you have about, at max, 100 to 120 bites at the apple to move 2,100 cases on top of all of the new cases come in, which are about 3,000 to 3,200 per year of just felonies. So that's a very coordinated, orchestrated set of movement to both catch up and move the new business. So that's what we're focused on.
Wow. All right. I, to my knowledge, have not committed a felony.
That's great.
And I will go ahead and admit that now. I'm innocent. But my understanding or my thought would be that the vast majority of people who find themselves in that situation want to try to get themselves out of it in the best way possible, which does lead itself, I think, I'm asking you, but does lead itself to a situation where maybe you can convince them to take a plea of some kind, right?
Sure.
So what is the percentage of those situations versus where you have to go to trial? And the other part of that question would be, there are some cases where you guys are not interested in a plea and you absolutely want to take them to trial.
Yeah. So basically, if we're charging 3,000 defendants with felonies per year and we only have at max, let's just say forget Christmas, Thanksgiving, forget every holiday known to man and anyone getting sick, 120 opportunities to go to trial. So 3,000 versus 120. We really have to be selective and strategic on who's going. So I mean, so 2,000 plus cases have to be negotiated. Well, if depending on the offense committed, there are all kinds of programs for lower level offenders. The higher level offenders, it's very important that they see us be successful in court and that the judges are taking those offenses seriously. And there's a serious sentence when the offense dictates and mandates such. Because everybody else over here who's going to have to plead guilty needs to see that, one, we're competent to do our jobs, which we are, and plead effectively. You'll see a lot of cases come across the media where someone's pleading the 80 years, 60 years. Why is that? Because they just saw somebody else get more. And so we do that for major offense cases. So everyone has to see that we have the ability to do our job, execute it efficiently and effectively. Otherwise, the entire system doesn't move because it's impossible to try 3,000 defendants with felonies in any given year. Okay. So we have to be strategic.
So talking about high publicity cases, for example, the Jack Strain case, it seems like I remember that he was given the opportunity to plead out. Now, I don't think it would have been pleasant, but I think that it was a lot better than what he ended up getting when you guys took him to trial. Do I have that right? Is that right?
There was an openness to have plea discussions. I prosecuted that case. And so at different points in time, there was an openness because there was in two different jurisdictions, there was federal matters pending in federal court. And then we had our state court proceedings, which were aggravated rape charges and incest charges. So there was an opportunity at one point really focused on not embarrassing these victims and, you know, digging up all that for their purposes. And then coordinating a plea in the federal system. Basically, what he was asking for was not going to happen. So that shut down pre-indictment. So pre-indictment, there was a conversation. And we said, once we bring this indictment, door closes. Door closed quickly. And we moved on and we prosecuted him. He now has four life sentences plus a consecutive 30.
Mm. All right, we're going to come back. We're talking to Colin Sims. We're talking about the business of the DA's office. And we got more to talk about with him right after this. Colin Sims is here, and we're talking about the business of the DA's office. We've been talking about prosecuting folks and maybe some ways that are the numbers that are involved in terms of cases that your office has to deal with. Let's talk a little bit about well before that, which is you guys have a system or a process where you're identifying some opportunities to really kind of push people one direction or the other well before, I guess, they're in the system or well into the system.
Yeah, we're really trying to use the first 72 hours that someone is incarcerated to identify who they are. Are they in there for a non-crime of violence? Are they in there because they have a mental health issue or a drug addiction or a sobriety issue? And more often than not, when looking at the offense committed in a defendant's criminal history, we kind of know the track the case is going to go unless there's new information or unique information brought. So the goal is to not burden the taxpayer with having to pretrial detain an individual who can't make bond on a simple possession of cocaine or otherwise. And we typically know that this person qualifies for either diversion probation or a specialty court. We can make that decision in 5 days. And why is that important? Well, because it costs $30-something a day to house someone. And when you multiply that by at least half of our offenders, and I'm being very conservative because it's more than half, of the 3,000 defendants we charge a year are for non-crimes of violence. So if you're making decisions on how to move those cases through the system and hopefully put this person through a program where they don't recidivate and cost us money twice, because 48% of defendants who commit a felony in the state of Louisiana recidivate. So if you're trying to do that, then you want to identify the program as early as possible, not waste 45 and 60 days in jail while you're going to put them into a program. Because the biggest problem is because the way our sentences have been gutted by the state of Louisiana, someone has now sat in jail long enough to get credit for time served, even if you get 3 and 4 years of a sentence, because the percentage that the state has you serve is unbelievably weak, and I hope people pay attention to that. Now the person is no longer incentivized to do the treatment. So all I've done is put a notch on their belt. I no longer have the time to put them through a program, and I will see them again in 3 months. That helps no one and costs the system twice as much money. So that's what we're trying to coordinate here locally and put them through these programs that we do have. And I think we do a good job in this parish of having a variety of specialty courts available that a lot of parishes don't.
One of the things that struck me about my conversations with the DA Warren Montgomery over the years is there's a lot of compassion in that guy. I mean, you know, it's a job where you think, and we certainly had that St. Slammany, mentality or whatever you want to call it with the previous administration. But when you talk to him, you see a guy that doesn't necessarily want to nail people to the wall just for this, that, and the other. He's trying to find ways to make things better.
Absolutely. Warren is a very compassionate man. The judges on the bench also see the worst of the worst and want to not see these people again. And you sit there and say, well, yeah, I could throw you in jail. And sometimes that needs to happen. And we have no problem doing that, I assure you. But the other part is also equally true, which is we have an opportunity to identify people and help them so we don't see them again. So a lot of the role as a prosecutor, yeah, you're in court, you're convicting people. That's our primary responsibility. But more and more, we are utilized on this later identification moment, back end, arguably very late. It's a shame that the criminal justice system is having to be utilized to help people get mental health, sobriety, drug treatment. But it's an opportunity for us to do that. And so we're taking that opportunity and trying to help people just as much as we're prosecuting them. And that's important because we don't want to see these guys. And they're citizens of St. Tammany. And so if we can make them productive and help them get sobriety and help them change the path, that is a far greater achievement than just convicting someone.
All right. I got one more question for you, and you may not like it, but I'm going to ask it at the end. Sure. That's why I'm doing it this way.
Sure.
Obviously, I've heard a good bit about you. This is the first time we've done an interview, but your name kind of, you know, precedes itself a little bit in terms of who you are. Are you happy where you are, and do you think you'll be there for a significant amount of time? Because looking from where I'm looking, you got a pretty good job. I mean, it looks like it would be a very challenging but also a very rewarding job. So what are your future plans?
I love my job, and I think one of the reasons why I love it so much, it's amazing to help protect the place you live, and B, the part you asked me about, the compassion part, it really is amazing, both when you get justice for a victim and or you help someone no longer be a criminal and be productive. And that feels good. And so to get paid to do things that are impactful, meaningful, And before, I've got three kids, and when I get to tell them what I do and they look at me and they are proud, it's a whole lot better than going to make a ton of money. And so having this job, and the other thing that makes it fun and rewarding is I love the team that we've built. These guys are dedicated like you wouldn't believe, and they've given up so many other opportunities to be here because they feel that same way. So working in an environment where you're surrounded with guys that all feel the same way, it's cool. It's fun, and I hope I don't have to go anywhere anytime soon.
Good. We'll leave it at that. Thank you for the visit and for your willingness to chat with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We're going to come back in a second and roll out that Lake Luke question. Back with that next.